This is the Cater Daily Podcast for Friday, May 19th, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. Now that former FBI Director Robert Mueller will head an investigation into possible Russian meddling in U.S. elections, the range of what he could discover is quite high. Julian Sanchez, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, argues that the single-minded focus on potential secret, explicit collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government largely misses the point. You write in Just Security that you think this focus on explicit secret collusion, allegedly, between the Trump campaign and the Russian government is probably overwrought.
Yeah, the public debate about this, I think, has been dominated by this very narrow and binary question of whether there was a knowing collusion or some sort of explicit coordination specifically related to interference in the election and maybe even more narrowly than that on the coordination of the release of information from the hacked Democratic servers. And that seems to me like a mistake for a couple of reasons. First, I just think it's unlikely that that is going to be something that's proven with any kind of absolutely conclusive rock-solid evidence. First, because it's generally a difficult thing to prove. Even if people are colluding, that's something that if you don't have a kind of contemporaneous recording and nobody happens to confess, it's difficult after the fact to conclusively prove what two people were discussing. But I also think it's probably not something that occurred in the sense that people talk about. If we look back at that campaign, we see Russia pretty openly sort of rooting for and doing what they could to assist Donald Trump. We could see Trump obviously picking up on that and reciprocating, praising Russia, defending them from the consensus of the intelligence community that they'd intervened, but also picking up and quoting on the campaign trail articles from state media. We saw Trump confidants like Roger Stone sort of openly boasting about how they had conversations with, for example, the hacker Guccifer 2.0, who the intelligence community believes is sort of a front for the Russian government. So we can see how there was assistance from Russia and how even maybe they were funneling through cutouts like Guccifer information to the Trump campaign. But it would have almost, I think, been redundant to have, in addition to that, some kind of secret back channel. You have basically the oars here all rowing in the same direction, coordinated interests based on publicly available information that would have been made it superfluous to take the risk, frankly, from the Russian side of looping the Trump campaign in. This is a notoriously sort of very impulsive individual and a campaign and now an administration that are leaking like sieves. And so one of the things that I don't think has been asked is what exactly would have been the incentive for Russia to essentially read the campaign in to their interference operation. Most intelligence operations operate on a sort of strict need-to-know basis, and I just don't think the Trump campaign needed to know. All that said, there are daily reports of all sorts of suspect relationships and entanglements, so covert Russian financing for Trump-branded projects in Canada, Mike Flynn's many conflicts, including his employment as an unregistered lobbyist for Turkey, payments he accepted without disclosing them from Russian state media. There are a lot of questions, I think, that deserve to be answered and looked into about the extent of Russian influence over the campaign, leverage over the campaign. When intelligence agencies recruit assets, it's not, as I suppose people may imagine, Boris Badenov walking up and saying, "We would like to recruit you to work for Russian intelligence." Right? There's a whole complex array of ways that they recruit people, and you may be, an asset for an intelligence service without having any real idea of it. And I think the error then is to treat these investigations as though the only question worth answering that's going to come out of them is, was there knowing secret collusion, yes or no? And if the answer is no, then there's nothing to see here and we can move along. There are a lot of questions we might want to answer that have implications for national security that are not implicated in the answer to that question.
And the other thing that you point out here is that even if there were some explicit known back channel between the campaign and the Russian government, that would largely serve to give the Russian government leverage in, right. in a very sort of stupid, ham-handed way.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense from the perspective of either side. It would have been an enormous risk for Russia because it could be disclosed. The advantage to them primarily of coordinating would be the ability to hold the fact of the campaign's complicity over the administration's head. But the administration would understand this too, that there wasn't really a marginal benefit of secret coordination on top of the public and explicit coordination that was happening. So why would they want to give Russia any more leverage than they may already have? It's hard to see what either side had to gain at the margin from making a bargain explicit.
So Robert Mueller, the former FBI director, has been tapped as special counsel after Jeff Sessions recused himself. And so he has what seems to be, based on the language that authorizes him to look into all this, a fairly wide berth to expand this investigation into all sorts of things.
Yeah, and I think that's actually probably a good thing, precisely because I think there's a broad array of questions here that are worth answering and that might easily get lost in the shuffle if we had someone appointed with a very narrow focus on some specific legal question. Well, even taking it for granted, I mean, there are questions that may be worth answering that don't even directly involve a question of a criminal violation of statute. In intelligence investigations, very often what you want to do is sort of understand what an adversary is doing, and that may or may not involve violations of criminal law, but that's often not the primary point. When intelligence surveillance is carried out, for instance, clearly the idea in most cases is not that this eventually results in a criminal prosecution. Occasionally it does, but that's the tiny minority of instances of electronic surveillance. The point is actually to generate evidence of some kind of criminal proceeding in court. I think in a way it may be useful to think of this more as an intelligence or a counterintelligence investigation than as something geared toward prosecution. But the breadth of the mandate does at least mean that we're not going to be falling into that trap of being so hyper-focused on one question that we sort of look the other way if it turns out that any violation that may have occurred is different from what we anticipated going in.
And there's a distinction to be drawn here between what, if we're already at the point of asking questions like what did the president know and when did he know it, of what would can be considered an impeachable offense and what would be considered a criminal offense.
Right. And those are, of course, largely unrelated. The constitutional phrase, high crimes and misdemeanors, doesn't actually mean something that is a violation of criminal statute. High crimes meant at the time roughly abuses of power, abuses of office. Misdemeanors meant misconduct. When we look at the debate about, I think there was a similar sort of phenomenon happening in the debate about President Trump's conversations with James Comey, whether he had told him essentially to lay off Michael Flynn. Now, does that conversation, as reported from this alleged memo by former FBI Director James Comey, in itself constitute evidence of criminal obstruction of justice? No, certainly that alone, I think, pretty clearly doesn't meet the elements of that statutory offense. Is it nevertheless extremely inappropriate for a president to be having that kind of conversation with an FBI director? Yes. And I think it's fundamentally a political decision, not a matter of consulting statutes, to ask whether that impropriety rises to the level of impeachability.
Julian Sanchez is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.